Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
Thanks. We're back from break. My name's Renee Giacchino. I'm corporate counsel for the Center for Individual Freedom, and we were talking with Ralph Nader, kind of an interesting conversation, a change certainly from the consumer work that he does, consumer protection work that he does. He has authored the new book called The 17 Traditions. I promised him I'd give out the website one last time because we did have to cut his interview short as we had a hard time getting him on the line. It's 17traditions.com. We're also having trouble. I don't know what it is today with trying to get our guests online. We are trying to hook up with Bob Levy. Robert Levy, some of you may know the name. He's a staunch defender of the Second Amendment. He's worked very, very hard in Washington, D.C. He now resides actually in the state of Florida. But he was the lawyer who conceived the lawsuit that gutted the District of Columbia's tough gun control statute. Just last month, you may have read about it, the D.C. Court of Appeals affirmed that an individual has the right to keep and bear arms. This, I thought for sure, Stan, would be an interesting topic for our listeners, as I'm happy to discuss it with anyone who wants to call in until we can get Mr. Levy on the line. We also were fortunate enough to have Jeff call in. In fact, I think Jeff maybe announced it even before CNN did during that last break. We had Jeff on the line passing along to us the final DNA testing in the Anna Nicole Smith. So hopefully now that one can be put to bed and we don't have to discuss that any longer. Let's hope. Stan, I read something quite interesting in the paper the other day that I thought I'd share with some of the listeners. You know, very often we hear about some of these lawsuits that are going on that are quite ridiculous. And this one, you know, at least for me, it, you know, brought the cows home. But there's a subdivision in Tampa, Florida. Did you read about this in the paper? Where
no.
The homeowners are having to sue in Tampa, Florida, because they live in a gated community where cows are crossing in through some open fence area or going over a lowered fenced area and are unwelcomed in this gated community and happen to be coming in and mooing at all hours of the day, particularly in the early morning. And they are suing, seeking an injunction to have the cows removed from the neighborhood. Now, of course, every time the police show up, first of all, the Tampa City police said, you know, this is beyond our jurisdiction. So they've got
animal control, right?
I guess Hillsborough County is involved in it now at the county level. And they say, well, every time we show up with the cow jail, which I would assume is just one of those trailers that they pull behind, they said every time we pull up with the cow jail, there's none to be found. So they're having a hard time corralling these. But it interested me. It's a funny story in and of itself, but really what it was for me was a sad commentary on where we are in that, you know, this resulted in a lawsuit, that someone had to go to court, had to file a lawsuit in order to get relief for that.
Used to, your neighbors would try to return your cow.
Yeah, I mean, I was sharing the story earlier with someone who actually has a farm in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, I really need to follow this case, he said, because I have cows. Mm-hmm. And very often it is a situation where one of the cows will get out and there's not a whole lot that you can do about it.
Sometimes if you have a low spot in the fence, they'll jump that fence just as to get to the grass on the other side.
I've heard of cow tipping, but I have not heard of cow jumping.
Well, they don't jump over the moon, but they can jump over a low fence. And sometimes you have to just return them to the neighbor. We had that. I've had that as a kid. We'd have to round up some cows sometimes and get them back to their proper owner. We'd drive them back down the road till they got where they were supposed to be.
Oh, that is interesting. Well, the phone is ringing, and I'm hopeful that it's Bob Levy who's going to be joining us on the phone to talk about the recently released decision by the D.C. Court of Appeals. There is some discussion already that case is going to be appealed to the next level, and anyone who is, as Bob is, a staunch defender of the Second Amendment is certainly going to want to follow along with this case, and it's one that has been going on for quite some time. I think years and years ago, Mr. Levy instigated this lawsuit when he was with the Cato Institute, although it is not a lawsuit, I think, that falls under the ambit of Cato Institute. It is one that he did while he was there. And like other critics of the law, you know, he cites the district's annual triple-digit homicide totals and its ridiculously high rate of crime as evidence that the statute has not made Washington any safer, which is what, when they passed it many, many years ago, you know, they said, you know, if we disarm these residents, you know, then D.C. is going to be a safer place. If we disarm, you know, the criminals, the residents, everyone. So they essentially had an all-in-all out ban on guns in our nation's capital. And he challenged that, saying that it violated the Second Amendment to the Constitution, that the Second Amendment, in fact, confers an individual the right to keep and bear arms, as opposed to some sort of collective or state militia, which is, you know, how the other side of this debate had, the gun control activist had played it out. Okay, joining us on the line now, we do have Mr. Levy. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Nice to be with you.
Well, I've given a little bit of a background on the case itself going back many, many years. How long was this case in court?
It was filed in February of 2003, so we're talking about more than 4 years.
More than 4 years it took. The wheels of justice certainly do turn slowly. And now you have, as of last month, a decision from the D.C. Court of Appeals affirming an individual's right to keep and bear arms. Tell us about the court's decision, please.
This was the first federal appellate court to overturn a gun control statute on Second Amendment grounds. There had been one other federal appellate court in the Fifth Circuit down in Texas that had ruled the same way, but in that case, they did not overturn the gun control law. They determined that the gun control law was a reasonable regulation, even though there is an individual right to keep and bear arms. So the D.C. case was unique in regard to overturning a gun control regulation.
Now, have any other of the federal courts looked at the issue and ruled in the opposite direction? I guess in essence I'm asking, you know, is this case now ripe for, now that there may be some conflict among the different federal courts?
The other circuits, we're talking about 11 different circuits now.
Right.
The D.C. Circuit and the Fifth Circuit have both said that there's an individual right. The Fifth Circuit did not overturn the statute. The D.C. Circuit did. In all of the other circuits, they said either that the Second Amendment doesn't apply to the states, it only applies to the federal government, and therefore they didn't have to reach the issue of whether or not the Second Amendment secured an individual right. Or they said that the right secured by the Second Amendment was not individual, rather it was a collective right. It only belonged to persons who were serving in a militia, and with respect to weapons that were being used in connection with that service. So that's the way all the other courts have gone, the D.C. Circuit being unique in regard to both overturning a statute and holding that the Second Amendment secures an individual right.
What about the U.S. Supreme Court? Has it ever decided whether the Second Amendment protects an individual or collective right?
No. The U.S. Supreme Court last visited this issue in 1939 in a case called U.S. v. Miller. It was a very strange case, and it was a very strange opinion, which did very little to illuminate the Second Amendment, and I think it's fair to say did a whole lot to mystify the Second Amendment. The precise holding in Miller was that the Second Amendment protects weapons that tend to improve or enhance the efficiency of a militia. That's the way they interpreted the Second Amendment. So the court in Miller said it's all about the weapon. Well, that's what Judge Silberman in our case was bound by. And so he found that a handgun, and that's the weapon that's at issue in the D.C. case, a handgun has been carried by United States military people in every war since the Revolution. So it's quite obviously, self-evidently, a weapon that does enhance the efficiency of a militia. And since the Miller Court held that the Second Amendment was all about the type of weapon involved, Judge Silberman agreed that handguns are protected weapons. Some circuits, the circuits that have gone the other way, have said not only must the weapon be a type of weapon that's used and improves the efficiency of a militia, but the use of the weapon and the person using the weapon must be a member of the militia and using it in accordance with his militia service. Miller holding actually didn't go that far, but that's the way the other courts have interpreted it.
What's been the response in Washington, D.C.? Both at the legislative level, I mean, very often, you know, when a court will come in and do something, if there are people who are opposed to the decision, that, you know, they will try and you know, legislate away the decision. Has there been any discussion at all about anything like that happening, or any discussion of even an appeal?
A few things have happened. Let's take the courts first. D.C. has a couple of options. They can, and they have, asked the U.S. Court of Appeals in Washington to rehear the case en banc. Now, ordinarily, appeals courts sit in three-judge panels. When you rehear a case en banc, the entire court sits. That would be 11 judges.
Mm-hmm.
They filed a motion yesterday
to
rehear the case en banc. This was entirely anticipated. They had announced that they were going to do it. We knew they were going to do it, and they, in fact, did do it. The court may ask us to respond to that motion or may not. If they do, we will, of course, respond, and we will oppose a rehearing. Obviously, we like the opinion that we already have. So there is the possibility that they won't get a rehearing. There's the possibility that they will get a rehearing, but they will lose again. Then they still have the option of asking the Supreme Court to review the case. And because this is a case of very significant, very much importance, and because there is a split among the circuits, as you pointed out, the Supreme Court, I think, is pretty likely to weigh in on this one. And
now,
that would mean for the first time in nearly 40 years, we'll get a four-square pronouncement from the court as to what the Second Amendment is all about.
Now, I know, you know, routinely you hear something maybe coming from the Ninth Circuit and going to the Supreme Court, and you kind of go, okay, there's another opportunity. I think the Ninth Circuit is on record as having, you know, the worst record when it comes to cases being upheld at the Supreme Court. They are routinely overturned at the Supreme Court level. What kind of track record does the D.C. Court of Appeals have before the Supreme Court?
Well, most people consider the U.S. Court of Appeals in D.C. to be the second most important court in the country. Part of that is because the federal government can be sued in Washington, D.C., because that's, after all, where the government resides. And so a lot of cases get to D.C., even though they're not cases that where the problems arose in D.C. And so in this instance, when we're talking about guns, there can be challenges to federal gun laws in any state in the union, and those challenges can be brought in Washington, D.C., because of the location of the federal government in D.C. D.C., therefore, is a very, very important circuit. It also handles all the administrative law cases coming up through the alphabet agencies, you know, the Federal Communications Commission and OSHA and EPA and SEC and on and on and on, ad nauseum. The D.C. Circuit, I think, I don't have statistics, but I do think that they are acknowledged to be a very powerful and very competent circuit, and I don't think the reversal rate is as high as, certainly not as high as the Ninth Circuit, and I doubt that it's as high as the average of the other circuits, but I'm not in possession of statistics to confirm that.
Okay, Mr. Levy, we need to take a very quick break, but when we come back, I'm going to ask you to pull out your crystal ball, and if you can give us, based on the current composition of the court, how you think this case would fare should it go up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And then I want to talk about something that I think I read where it said that you've never actually owned a firearm and probably never will, and just why this case is still so important to you. So we'll be right back after this very short break. We're talking with Robert Levy. He's a staunch defender of our Second Amendment rights. So please stay tuned.
Hi, this is Leslie Kaufman, and I personally want to invite you, your business, and your family and friends to come stay with us at our local Red Roof Inn and Suites, located at Avalon Boulevard and Interstate 10. Red Roof Inn has been constantly rated one of the top in the Southeast for customer satisfaction and value. We provide full continental breakfast, four channels of HBO, laundromat, screened-in pool, and complimentary USA Today delivered daily to your door to our ReadyCard members. Families will enjoy our spacious, fully equipped suites. Business travelers will appreciate our Business King rooms and 625-square-foot meeting room with audio-visual aids, dual TVs, and VCR. Our conference room comfortably seats up to 50 people and is free with 8 or more rooms. So if you have training needs, family get-togethers, or just want to get away for the day, come visit Scott and Leslie Kaufman and our friendly staff at your locally owned and operated hotel. Come visit us at the Red Roof Inn and Suites. Call us today at 995-6100.
Sandy Blanton here. I've been a real estate broker in our area for 11 years. In order to offer my clients one-stop service, I also became a mortgage broker with Southern Real Estate Lending Corp. We offer all types of both residential and commercial mortgages. Good credit, bad credit, even ugly credit, we can finance anyone. We can meet or beat anyone's rates. Houses, apartment buildings, mobile home parks, office buildings, we can finance them all. Call me now at 484-9650. That's 484-9650. I'm Sandy Blanton with Southern Real Estate Lending Corp.
Why are capital punishment and war sometimes good things? Hi, this is Dennis Prager. For interesting and enlightening discussion on these and other topics that affect you and this great country we live in, tune into my show weekdays from noon till 1 here on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. You'll hear the Prager perspective on a variety of moral and ethical issues. My show is also a welcome break from all of the political talk. It's the Dennis Prager Show, weekdays at noon, right here on 1330 WEBY.
What does it take to safely and conveniently move to a new home or office? Well, it takes two men and a truck. Now, I don't mean you and a friend. I mean two men and a truck. That's the name of my moving company, Two Men and a Truck. And while our company did start literally with two men and a truck, we now have a fleet of moving trucks and a crew of uniform, trained, professional movers who can easily handle your local or long-distance move. This is Mark Malore, owner of Two Men and a Truck in Northwest Florida. For residential and commercial moving, call us at Two Men and a Truck, 471-1166. We're Two Men and a Truck. Movers who care.
Now, back to your turn on 1330 WEBY, Northwest Florida's Talk Radio. The phone lines are open, so call in and join the conversation at 623-1330.
We're talking with Robert Levy. He's the lawyer who conceived the lawsuit that gutted the District of Columbia's tough gun control statute. And although the practical effect of the D.C. Circuit's ruling, and we've been talking about this, is limited to the confines of Washington, D.C., how far that decision may eventually, the tentacles of it reach, may depend, in fact, on what happens as it moves across and then up. Across meaning to the en banc, should it be granted an en banc hearing before the entire Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia, and from there, maybe even the U.S. Supreme Court. Okay, did you pull out your crystal ball, Mr. Levy?
Well, I think the time is ripe for the Supreme Court to take this case. I think the court's makeup is better than it has been, again, from a Second Amendment perspective. I think the substitution of Alito for O'Connor is probably a plus insofar as these things can be predicted. And frankly, I think the court's makeup is better than it's going to be over the near term. So that bodes well for the court reviewing the case. The other side, by the way, has a lot more to lose in this case. There are 47 states that say the Second Amendment doesn't provide any protection for gun owners challenging state and local gun laws. There are only three states, Texas, Mississippi, and Louisiana, and D.C., that say there is some protection. There is this fly in the ointment. For reasons that, frankly, are inexplicable to me, Congress is now considering legislation. You had asked earlier what can happen in
at the legislative level.
Nothing can happen at D.C. because, basically, Congress has control there, and frankly, D.C. couldn't do anything that would violate the Constitution, and the court has said that that's exactly what they've done so far. So they couldn't, you know, say, look, we intend to keep this, and therefore the heck with the court. That's
right.
Not something they could do. But Congress has proposed to repeal the D.C. gun ban. Ordinarily, that would be a good thing. But in this case, if the gun ban is repealed, the case in the courts is what lawyers call moot. That is, there's no longer any issue involved. You
right.
can't challenge a law that's already been repealed. Now, we would love to see the law repealed, but what we would really like to see is a pronouncement from the Supreme Court about the Second Amendment, something that would apply not just within D.C., which is what the law would do, the legislation in Congress would do, just D.C., but something that would apply all across the United States, and something that couldn't be repealed by the next more liberal Congress. So this is legislation I think is ill-conceived, it's premature, it's counterproductive, and the very best thing that Congress could do if they want to pass legislation, either they could wait until the Parker case has been resolved in the Supreme Court, or if they want to pass some legislation now, there are lots of things they can do. They can, for example, simplify the registration procedures for rifles and shotguns in D.C. They can eliminate the requirement that says you can't buy a gun interstate. So there's all kinds of things that Congress could do if they want to be helpful. The one thing that would be distinctly unhelpful is if they now repeal the D.C. gun ban just before we have a chance to find out from the Supreme Court what the Second Amendment really means. The NRA, which is in back of this legislation, again has assured me that they're not trying to do anything that would would interfere with the case. So I'm taking them at their word. I hope that's the case, and I hope that they back off on this legislation so that the case can proceed through the court. If it does proceed through the court, I think we have a real chance of getting a holding from the Supreme Court that affirms that the Second Amendment secures an individual right.
Now, if my facts are correct, you are a former District of Columbia resident, I think native of District of Columbia. Now you live in our Sunshine State here in Florida. But I think I read in an article in the Washington Post, in fact, I know I did because I've got it here in my hand now, I just can't find the quote, but it said that you've never, here it is, never owned a firearm and probably never will. Mr. Levy, what was the impetus then for you to research, spend hours and hours and hours fighting this case and, in fact, you know, getting a critical victory for individual freedom in America here?
Yeah. Well, I, as you say, I was born in D.C. I grew up in D.C. I spent 64 years in the D.C. area. My mom still lives in the D.C. suburbs. I visit D.C. regularly. I worked for 9 out of the last 12 years in downtown D.C. Now I work and live in Naples, Florida. I haven't had a gun since I was in the Air Force, and I don't have a gun now, and I haven't owned a gun, and that's because I live in an environment that I think is fairly risk-free, but a lot of folks in D.C. don't live risk-free environment. And D.C., as you probably know, off and on has been the nation's murder capital. And so it's clear that gun control hasn't worked in D.C. But the real issue for me is not so much about guns, it's rather about the Constitution. I think on policy grounds, there's a compelling argument that Americans do deserve an opportunity to defend themselves by possessing suitable firearms. But even if it were to cut the other way, that is, even if it could be demonstrated, and I think emphatically it cannot be demonstrated, but even if it could, that more gun laws means that we have a safer city, certainly not the case in D.C. Even if that were the case, gun laws are not just about public policy. They're about what does the Constitution mean, and particularly what does the Second Amendment mean. So we had on March the 9th, the second most important court in the country, say that the Constitution says you can't have an outright ban on handguns. So if there is this argument that D.C. wants to make, that the city's going to be safer, notwithstanding all the evidence to the contrary, then their remedy is change the Constitution. We can't simply ignore the Constitution and act like the document doesn't exist. We have a written Constitution. It's been a really good thing for over 200 years, and it's about time we paid attention to it.
Well, hats off to you for this historic victory. We'll continue to watch it. If folks want to follow along on the Internet with what's going on, or if they want to help out with the effort and support it in any way, how can they learn more about it, Mr. Levy?
The best thing is to check with the Cato website, which is www.cato.org. The Cato Institute is not part of the lawsuit. Cato is a think tank and not a litigating firm. But I am a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, and so the activities of the lawsuit are pretty well cataloged on the Cato website, and there's all sorts of information there about Second Amendment.
Okay.
So that's one way of keeping tabs. And
it'll be in the news, no doubt.
Yeah, my email is available through the Cato website as well.
Okay, that's Cato, CATO.org. You can learn more about this issue, learn more about the Second Amendment historic victory that was secured by Mr. Robert Levy. We've been talking with him. He's a staunch defender of the Second Amendment. Thank you so much, Mr. Levy, for joining us this afternoon, and we will watch very closely. When do you think we'll know whether or not the court's going to take it en banc? How long will it be? Well, you don't even know if you have to respond.
Yeah, we're going to find out pretty quickly whether we respond, and then I think if they accept it en banc, it's going to add 3 to 6 months onto the process. If they don't accept it en banc, then we should know this summer whether the Supreme Court will take the case.
Okay, we'll be watching. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll be right back after this break.